This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 755, brought to you by Bookshelf. Save and organize any type of digital media at bookshlf.com and on their iOS app from the Apple Store. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks and being smart and good.
Just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to.
Hello, welcome to my Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 755. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
Hey.
And that's it. That's it this week.
Thanks, everyone.
We gave Ryan his compliment of science talk for the month.
Mm-hmm.
He can come back in November.
We've done enough.
We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the favorite one. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, some listener mail if we have time, the patron pick, all kinds of fun things happen here because there's not a lot of room for fun in life right now. And we try to find it where we can. That the show is one of the things that we do for that, for us and hopefully for you.
Listen, you don't need to justify it for them.
I'm just saying, we try to make it fun.
Yeah.
Try to make it nice. Here's your spoiler warning. There's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick this week.
I did have the pick. Now, if you remember last time that I had the pick, it was a whole thing where I read a bunch of books, and they were okay, and mm-hmm. I kind of was like, I got to pick something.
Right.
It was a little different this week in that I read a bunch of books, and they were all pretty good. Like, I had fun. I enjoyed mm-hmm. reading my books this week, but I didn't have, like, a standout. So I had to put my thinking cap on,
yep.
And the first thing I did was I thought, how much time do you have to think about this? So I figured that out first because you can't go in without a plan.
Right.
That's just
you got to know what you're up against.
Yeah, exactly. So I came away from it making the pick of the week, Strange Academy number 4 from Scotty Young, from Humberto Ramos on art, Edgar Delgado on color, and Clayton Cowles on letters. Here's how it works. I realized that I really look forward to this book. Mm-hmm. When I see this new issue, I'm like, oh, and they're not coming out every 2 weeks. So that's a little, you know, reorientation. And it's fun. It reminds me of, you know, like the X-Men Academy days. I mean, obviously, sort of done in that mold. But really what we're working with is a bunch of new characters, more or less, in Marvel. And you get to know them and they have secrets and there's rivalries and there's all those things. And it you know, it's really fun. And it's we've said, you know, like, well, they have a hard time coming up with new characters at Marvel. And these are all just antecedents of characters that sort of already exist.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, but I think I have a soft spot for the Marvel Young team books. Because if I think back, you had X-Men Academy, which is really one of the last X-Men books I regularly read and enjoyed. There was Dennis Hopeless's, the one where they're like the Hunger Games.
Well, yeah, basically. It was. Yeah, well, you had
X-Men
Avengers.
X-Men Arena.
You had Avengers.
Young Avengers.
First of all, go to Young Avengers, Runaways. That's further back. That's mm-hmm. You're big yep. fans of those books, as we all were. Avengers Arena, X-Men, Wolverine the X-Men. Was that the name of that book? That was the Academy. Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, these are fun.
Yeah. And so you take that and you couple it with the fact that I've really enjoyed watching Scotty Young become a really capable writer.
Yeah.
You know, like, everybody's been a fan of his art for a really long time, but he kind of made this, it's weird because it's a guy who's completely known for having this very original art style. And when he would do a book, it was a big deal. And he's almost completely shifted over to writing books instead of drawing them. I know lots of guys who were artists and they became script writers because they weren't great artists.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a great artist, and yep, he made that switch over. It's kind of unprecedented.
Probably, less work.
Oh, I'm sure. And then he can dash off a sketch a day and sell them for more than I make in a year. You know, but I've just been impressed by it.
He's a great writer. I think between this book and the one on Image, whose name is Middle of the West.
Yeah.
This book particularly is really fun.
Yeah.
And it also, it looks so good.
Yeah, no, and that's incredible. The other, like, a little while back, we were, I don't remember on what format, we were having a conversation about, like, who's the artist, you know, who represents this age or whatever of comics.
Probably 750. That's why I overdid it.
Yeah, and I floated the name Humberto Ramos. Now, I don't think that that's exactly right,
mm-hmm,
but I do think that he occupies this great space. You know, like, whenever he shows up in a book, it's a good thing. You know, it's just, he's got his own style that is instantly recognizable and fun. It has its own energy, but it does feel very Marvel. You know, it fits in. It's not like an outsider kind of thing. It's sort of the perfect amount of stylism and just being the right guy for the job. And, you know, this is a lot of work. You've got a large number of characters, and this goes for the writing too, that we all have to get to know. They're kind of lots of crazy kind of monster people and their kids. And, you know, there's a real good distinction between those characters. We know who we're looking at for the most part. You know, overall, it's a really challenging book to do. And there's big action scenes, and like they destroyed a library with a giant monster. And then one of the other girls becomes a giant, and it's a lot. And I think it's being accomplished really tidily. It doesn't feel labored at any point. You know, at the same time, there's always a bunch of characters standing around. There's always the mindless ones there. And it's really fun. You know, it's got an element of a lot of things that I like, and it's being worked capably. Now, this issue was fun. It's fun because I, you know, on Comixology, you can hit the page view and you can get sort of the grid of pages.
Yep.
You look at them all in one place. I'm like, there's not really many pages for everything that happened in this one. There's an issue in the library that's going on, and then they decide they're going to play tag through doors. So they're
magic door tag.
Magic door tag. They're jumping between dimensions. They end up in Weird World. They end up in like all these different places, and it's very fast paced. And you still manage to get a bunch of characterization out for a bunch of people. It's a lot.
It is a lot, and I think part of the feeling of it being so dense is the art. Is that because every panel is packed full of detail and texture and characters. Humberto Ramos doesn't skimp.
You know, that's impressive, not just on its own, but also in the fact that like, he's a veteran. He doesn't probably have to put so much into it, but he just does. Like, he goes for, they go into Asgard, they go into Weird World.
Spider-Man makes a cameo.
Yes, there's a quick Spider-Man. If you go back, you know, and you'll see stuff in the background. So the original page where they're in the library and the mindless ones are around, out the window, you can see the giant girl looking in. You know,
right.
It's just...
Oh, yeah.
There's always something more to see. And this has had some of my favorite pages, I think, in the comics I'm reading lately. Yeah, God, it's beautiful.
Ramos is a veteran. He knows what he's doing, and he's got a very unique style that it's very lived in. You know, the stone floors have texture. The scene where Doctor Strange is walking through, like, the
I was just looking at basement. That is a great Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Like, he's got weight to him. You know, he's kind of... He's grim. They managed to bring the ghost dog back.
I forgot about the ghost dog.
Good bats. Yeah, I love that dog.
It's just, this is a fun book. I remember when we first got the announcement about our, I think Marvel sent out a packet to the reviewers.
Yeah, they actually sent us the, they're not viewers.
Yeah.
They actually sent the issue, which doesn't happen anymore. Like, I got a FedEx one day. I'm like, the hell's this? And it was the first issue.
I remember being like, okay. But then I read it, and I was like, it was really good. And it's been good ever since. And I do like seeing it when it comes out. I'm looking forward to a little bit of story. I don't need there to be like a complicated tapestry in these kind of school books. But it'll be nice when there's some sort of overall story explored. Right now, we're just sort of hanging out with the characters, which is good because we got to get to know them.
Yeah. And we're only on the fourth issue.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's the fact that when something comes out monthly now, it just feels like it's 6 months.
They
like
rewired our brains. They have totally fucked us. Yeah, this book is great. You're right, going to the page view, seeing how actually few pages. And I think that's probably the case for every comic now, because they're all 20 pages.
Yeah, but I mean, they make
it didn't
the most
feel like it. Didn't feel like it at all.
Boy, the giant fighting the creature that mm-hmm. crashes through the... That's what you want out of superhero comics right there, those pages. That's 100% the way that things should be.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I dig it, and I like that. Like, I can compare it to other books that have come along before, but I can't compare it to any of the books that are out right now. And like this is, I feel like this is what comics should be right now. Like, it's just fun and exciting and a lot of really inventive things and colorful, you know. Right, not 1986. That's what it is.
And a little scary, the cliffhanger.
Sure.
A little like, oh, no. Kids in the swamp.
Mr. Bill's in this one, huh?
He's got leeches. what's next? John Constantine Hellblazer, 11. I think this is the penultimate issue, is it not?
It feels like it, yeah.
12 would be the natural final issue.
Well, yeah, but if you're doing a Supernatural book, 13 might be the way to go, so it's hard to say.
I don't think the trade paperback people care about poetry.
That's why I don't get to be editor. I'm like, no, you got to do 13 because it's cool. The numbers don't support that. Well,
so this one was very much like an overview, which I thought was really interesting for the second to last issue.
Mm-hmm.
Not an overview of what we've seen, but an overview of sort of the big bad. Sort of the big bad. I guess ultimately John Constantine is the big bad. So what did you think of this?
I started and I thought, oh no, you're just going to be explaining something to me the whole time. But it really did kind of suck me in. And I thought the idea of this member of parliament who's actually a demon or entity or something who like feeds off of fear.
Like a fear succubus.
A boggart is one of the things. Or they called him the bogey or a hobgoblin. It's just that kind of, you know, fairy tale monster. And he becomes a politician and he's sort of that UKIP kind of thing who's sowing fear and distrust of the other. And he's like, this was great. And then eventually the politicians become too corrupt for him. And it's like, it's not the same. And I'm not getting that out of it. It's just now it's just making themselves, you know, rich and changing the rules for them. And then they go into this underground bunker and the man says, there's a shower over there. There's a knife. Cut an opening and put yourself in. And it was like, what? And they go in and all of these naked politicians are in coital bliss with the body of like a giant who is Albion, which is a representation of Great Britain. And it is like, it is such like the symbolism is right on your nose. I mean, it's not. There's nothing subtle about it.
They've carved little holes for themselves, and they're going to town, and wherever the body, and there's women who have mounted things that have been mounted to the, like, it's just,
it's the
politicians of Britain are metaphorically and literally fucking Great Britain.
Yeah, like, he pulled in some Garth Ennis, he pulled in some Warren Ellis. It all works within Hellblazer. And then finally, like, I don't want to leave it out. You know, like, Aaron Campbell, you know, the thing is that I said I saw this narration and this, and I thought, oh, that's no fun. But, man, the art is so good to look at. Jordi Belair, if you told me this was Jordi Belair coloring it, I don't know if I'd have seen it. But she's really increased her range of the kinds of stuff that she can do. And the sort of use of the reds and the greens and how they're going back and forth. It's, you know, the color works in terms of the narrative. You can tell by the color if you're in the present or the past. And, it's just a really fascinating little book. You know, this is over soon. I don't know when we're going to see this kind of thing again.
Right.
So I'm really appreciating it. So we have this to deal with, and then we still have old John Constantine to deal with. So we'll see what happens with it.
But, it's a lot for one more issue to go.
Yeah, it is. Well, they weren't planning on stopping there.
This arc was planned on being over. So it'll be a lot to wrap up. And conclusion is next month. So Lazarus Risen.
Speaking of a lot.
Yeah. Number 5, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Are you still not enjoying it like this? It's like 68 pages with all the...
Yeah, everything. I'm not enjoying it like this, but I am enjoying it, if that makes sense. It takes a really long time for me to get back to where we were, and I really like the story with Forever when I can find it. Because everything else is kind of rough for me. I'm not sure. I spent time... So at the beginning... I'm not really sure who anybody is or where we are in a place.
Well, and we talked about this before. Like, the problem is that Forever and the trainer Acampo look exactly the same.
Yeah, what's her name?
Acampo. Yeah. Her last name is Acampo.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you have Young Forever, and then there's... So in the beginning, they're in the woods, and Young Forever... Well, we'll call it 8 and 7. That was at least somewhat helpful. 7 is meeting with 8, and they come out, and there's Beth.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe. And I guess Joe is the woman who is in charge of Carlisle.
Yep.
And I was trying to remember, like, is she bad or good? I don't remember.
Right.
If she's trying to fuck over Forever, or does she care about her? And then I was like, wait, is she one of the women? Wait, I don't know who anybody else is at this point.
I mean, the problem is that there's such complicated personal dynamics, and
yes.
The problem is they couldn't survive with monthly issues, or where they couldn't get it done in monthly issues, whatever the reason. So they went to this sort of quarterly format, and he admitted after the first one or two that he had trouble sort of adapting the story to that new format. Mm-hmm. And I'm a trade person, so there's just got to be a different way to handle. He gives you a run on the characters at the beginning. He gives you what happened last. That's super helpful. Without that, I'd be totally lost. But the problem with a book like this is it's so dense, and there's so many characters, and they look all the same, and there's so many complicated relationships that it's hard to keep track when it's only 4 times a year. And so something has to be done differently.
This is a novel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really silly to be like, he's a novelist, but he's writing this like a novel, and I think the only way that you could follow all of this
is to read
everything at once like a novel. This does not work. It's not bad. It's just the timing. Our brains are fucked, and this is too much.
That being said, this is Forever's Michael Corleone issue, where she gets her revenge on two of the families for killing her possible boyfriend.
Yeah.
She just basically wipes out two of the whole warring families, the Marais and the D'Souzas.
Yeah, by the end, I was totally into it.
I know. When she took out the D'Souzas, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then they had the raid on the Marais compound, and I was like, oh, shit. By the end, you're like, fuck, it's the same thing as with... at the end of The Godfather, when they had to baptize the baby, you're just like, oh, shit, well, that happened. So, I mean, I really liked it. Once I got to the end, I was like, that was awesome,
The initial scene, with the two Forevers, I liked it a lot, but I have no idea how we got there. You know what I mean? I knew who they were, but I don't remember the circumstances leading up to it. And then it took me about half the issue to get myself acquainted.
Mm-hmm.
30 pages or 25 pages or whatever. Once I got there, I was good. But the fact is, whenever the next one comes out, this is going to happen again.
Groundhog Day. Is that like the war I get? I don't need to be reacquainted with the war, because we've been reading that for that. I don't know. Has it been 5 or 6 years we've been reading this book?
Yeah.
But, where we are in Forever's life and development, and her trying to break free, and the new Forever and the Doctor. So, like, that's stuff that you have to reacquaint yourself with. And it's half this issue. It's a lot. The first half is basically Forever and 7 and 8 and their, telemetry
Marisol,
packages, and Marisol.
And Beth and Joe and,
It's just, that's tough. That's tough. Yep.
Yeah, and I don't know anybody's motivations. Like, there's duplicity, or there's guile, or whatever's going on. Like, I'm unclear what any of that is at this point.
At one point, time passes, and Forever's hair starts to get a little longer, and I was like, great. And then I think she cut it again. I was like, damn it.
There really is. We love Michael Lark. I love him. He's one of my favorite artists, but he's got a design problem here.
I just don't know how. I mean, it's a little shaggier at the end, so that's good. But, there was like 3 or 4 issues in a row where she and Marisol look exactly the same. And so that was a real problem. And it was still a problem at the beginning of this issue.
I guess Marisol's the one with the tattoo. Like, that's supposed to be the signal.
But when I see two close-ups of people's faces talking to each other, and they have the same haircut and the same face and the same skin tone, it's like, okay.
And the same color. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on here.
Yep.
But I'm always like, oh, Lazarus. And then I just spend half the issue reacquainting myself.
I think given all of this, I think I have to rescind my threat.
Well, they changed the rules on you.
They did. They changed the rules on me. So I don't want the book to be canceled. I would like to finish it because I'd like to know where it's going. But mm-hmm. I will no longer be putting anyone against the wall.
Yeah. It's just a compassionate thing to do from a leader.
Yeah. I mean, it's the right call. And, I'm, you know, in this world, I don't want to be the leader making the wrong choices.
They changed the game on you.
Changed the game.
Colonel Weird, : Cosmagog, number one from Jeff Lemire and Tyler Crook. This is the latest in Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer Empire. And Colonel Weird is one of my favorite characters from Black Hammer. He is the Adam Strange analog, because as we know, Black Hammer is sort of a Silver Age DC analog book. He is the character that is caught between several dimensions. He's not exactly Adam Strange, although his dress is just like him. His name is Colonel Weird. But he sort of lives at all times simultaneously, so he's the character who sort of lost his mind and sees the past, present, future all at the same time. And so he's always saying ominous, portentous things. So here we have an issue that focuses entirely on him, and the Tyler Crook art is just incredible.
He's great. I love Tyler Crook. He did BPRD for a while.
Yeah, he does the art, the color, the lettering. He does everything. We're really sort of diving into this character as... it's hard to keep track of because there's so many of these books, but at the end of the main Black Hammer story, everybody but Colonel Weird escaped the purgatory, and he's sort of left on his own. So we're seeing him here living in the past as a kid, and we sort of flash to the, not the present, but the time when they fought the dark side anti-god and got sent to purgatory in the first place, and then we see him in his spaceship when he's sort of a younger man, and so there's all kinds of things happening here. He's at one point a hippie guru. We're seeing all facets of his life, and I guess he's going to try to put himself back together. It was a really fun issue and a really beautiful issue. Between this and Strange Academy, these are the two of the best looking books this week.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character, and this is kind of a place you can jump on. It's confusing, but it's meant to be. The character is confusing, and I think we're going to sort of get less confusing as it goes on. Lemire's clearly having a lot of fun. This is some of his best work is in these Black Hammer books.
Like, I know that it's good. Mm-hmm. And if I had started from the beginning, I'd be there. But every once in a while, I'll see one of those books come out, and I go, that looks cool. What is that? Look at that team. And then I go, oh, it's Black Hammer. I don't have to do that.
I get it. I mean, it's a lot of books.
It totally is. And like, each of the individual minis... I'm like, that looks pretty good. I guess I'll have to add it. And I'm like, oh, no, I missed that boat. Can't go. Sorry, have fun. Like, you got to let some go.
It's tough. I haven't counted how many, but it feels like there's constantly a mini going on from Black Hammer.
Dozens.
Yeah. He's got a cottage industry going on.
But hey, if that works for him, that's awesome. You know,
it seems seems to be popular.
Cool, yeah, that's a cool gig to get.
And he gets incredible artists on it.
Yes.
Guys like Tyler Crook, but also guys you've never heard of who are terrific. And
I mean, I think he fits. I think this is a better fit for him than DC.
Oh, yeah. He gets to kind of do DC, but on his own terms and not worry about it.
Yeah, and because on his own, you know, in that system, like, he did pretty good work, but you just got the sense, like, you're not.
Yeah.
He's not hitting his stride the way that he does on his own stuff.
No, he has his own tone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really fit with Marvel or DC, but it fits with his... indie stuff or with his, at the time, Vertigo books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this sort of marries those two things. It marries like old school DC plus his strange indie tone, and we get really great stuff out of it. I think that he finally hit something that seems to be, you know, hit the zeitgeist when it first came out, and it got popular. I mean, Dark Horse.
I mean, the fact that they're still doing them means something.
There was just one last week I just read, or the week before, and there's constantly Black Hammer. Oh, it's Skull Digger. Yeah, that was last week. So he's constantly got books coming out. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break and talk about Bookshelf. Bookshelf is like your actual bookshelf, Josh, but for digital content. It's a place you can save and organize any type of digital media, your favorite articles, podcasts, playlists, YouTube videos, newsletters, etc., all onto shelves. You can add all your favorite content from any source in one place where you can share it with your community. No more screenshotting articles or texting things to your friends. Now they can find it all on Bookshelf. Here's how it works. On Bookshelf, each user creates shelves to organize their content. Shelves are like lists or collections. Shelves are unique to each other and allow you to express your taste and expertise. Your shelves can be organized by topic, by mood, by category, or media type, anything you want. They're shareable on any platform like Twitter, email, or text to your friends. It's social. We don't want to be social. We're all stuck inside. We need social interaction. Bookshelf is social. You can follow users to see their bookshelves and follow their content, what they like. Subscribe to shelves curated by experts and members of your community across any category, culture, tech, business, health and wellness, food, etc. And it's great for discovering quality content from trusted individuals. So like we said, it's community, it's social. So it's a growing community of engaged, loyal content consumers and information junkies. There's no bullying. It's not toxic like other platforms. You'll feel more informed when you use Bookshelf. You'll feel like you learned something new. You'll feel like you've expanded your perspectives. And the quality and depth of the content is much better than other platforms. It's humans sharing content, which is better than algorithms sharing content. And Bookshelf is simple and easy to use. We use Bookshelf. We have several shelves. I'm a fanboy. We have a bookshelf that shows off all the books we've been talking about on our Booksplode show. So if you want to see those, if you don't know all the books we talked about, also have a shelf for our Mediasplode show, where we've been listing the things we've been talking about on our Mediasplode shows, which we've had people write in and say, hey, what were you guys talking about on that one episode? Because you didn't put it in the show notes. So it's all on our Mediasplode bookshelf. And you can go there and you can click through. And it's, you know, if you say, oh, I've never seen Ted Lasso, you can click on Ted Lasso and it'll take you to where you can find it.
Oh, that's just a great thing to see right there.
It's a lot of fun. You know, everyone is constantly consuming media and everyone's constantly talking about it with their friends. And you don't necessarily know where to find things your friends are talking about. You can find it all on Bookshelf. So go to bookshelf.com. That's BOOKSHLF.com. You can check out their website and you can also download the iOS app from the Apple Store. Check it out. It's a great place to curate what you're engaging with.
You got to leave the E out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get to it. Bookshelf, but with no E there. That's how you find it.
Everybody likes curating their content and making lists and sharing it. And that's a great place to sort of put it all together.
People love lists.
Yeah.
People can't get enough of lists.
Yeah.
So this is great for that.
It's a great place you can refer back to. What was I watching back then or listening to or reading? Keep track of it all. Bookshelf.com. BOOKSHLF.com.
Do you remember back in G.I. Joe, the original series, it was like in the 150s, there's like a bunch of G.I. Joes were gunned down in a pit.
Yep. Yeah, it's like 110. It's around there.
Yeah.
And it was the Viper. Something Viper did it. Like, it was a quick kick. All those people.
Since G.I. Joe 7, I've been reading this current G.I. Joe run.
Mm-hmm.
G.I. Joe 7 was the one about sort of Scarlett having PTSD.
Right.
You know, it was a great issue. And then the last one, I'm not actually sure how these are all related, except that we're in a world.
That was the G.I. Joe Cobra one last issue, right?
Yeah. So Cobra's taken over, basically, and are in charge of things. And G.I. Joe is more like a covert guerrilla team. And this is all about, like, there was a mission in one of the cities or something like that, and everyone was killed except Tunnel Rat, who has to, like, fight his way out. And I forget who the other character was. Basically, it was down to these two. I want to say Dusty. I feel like it was Dusty, but I don't. I'm not flipping through it to find it right this second. And they said, all right, well, one of us has to create a distraction, and the other one has to get back to Shipwreck for the pickup. And Dusty's like, well, you're going to make it a lot further than I am, because he's Tunnel Rat.
Mm-hmm.
Which Tunnel Rat, if you've ever done the research, Tunnel Rat's the worst thing to be in Vietnam.
Ugh.
Exactly, but he's a survivor, and so he has to leave Dusty behind, you know, and he escapes. He gets through the, you know, he kills a bunch of bat. Actually, the mission was to destroy the capability for making bats chips, so they can't make more bats, who are the robot soldiers.
Yep.
You know, and he gets out, and Shipwreck's there to pick him up on a ship, which isn't wrecked. You know, he's like, where is everyone? He's like, they didn't make it. Shipwreck does this thing. He's like, well, we did the mission anyway. I was like, whoa, oh, chipper that Shipwreck. No, I mean, it was sad, but he was really trying to find a silver lining to it. It was really fun. It was, oh, and Ryan Kelly drew it.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a good little issue. And also this one and the last one and the one, you could read all of them all on their own and you'd have a little G.I. Joe story.
Interesting.
It's been fun. Yeah. The last issue of Sex Criminals was 69. Parentheses, teehee, Josh. Sex Criminal 69, and I thought, you know, I've dipped in and out of this series.
I think they
time.
Jumped way ahead in the numbering.
That's fine.
To end on 69.
That makes sense. It's been coming out sporadically over the last few years as Chip Zdarsky's career has picked up, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought I would check in at the end. I always found that I could dip into this series, and it didn't really matter what I'd missed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just something they were talking about. And I've had really mixed feelings about this over the course of it,
yeah.
But I think there's something really interesting in it. I think there's something very honest in it, in the middle of it. And they all end up at this wedding of these two dudes, and they're on some island. And, you know, the two main characters are not together anymore. They've sort of moved on and grown up, and he was in jail for a while, and she found somebody who's nice but not super exciting. And it was really kind of subtle and sweet. And one thing I've enjoyed through the whole thing is Zdarsky's artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really beautiful in a very specific way that I don't see him doing a Marvel book or something, right, drawing. But, you know, for this, I thought it worked really well. It was low on the hokey stuff, you know, which is depending on your sense of humor, which way you want to go. But it was kind of sweet. And I think at the end, it was a much better book than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes.
Batman Three Jokers, book three, wrapped up this three-issue Black Label miniseries from Jeff Johns, Jason Fabok, and Brad Anderson. This was terrific. This was a terrific little miniseries, a terrific little Elseworlds Batman story, certainly much more enjoyable than whatever was going on in the main books right now, in which, you know, the idea is there's three different Jokers, the criminal, the comedian, and the clown. The idea here is which one's the real Joker. Does it even matter? The Joker's creating other versions of himself to try to sort of create the ultimate Joker. What you get here at the end is a little meta commentary from Batman, which says, I know the Joker's real name, but it doesn't matter. Everyone is always obsessed with what is the Joker's name, what is his origin, what is the truth behind the Joker, and Batman at the end is basically like, I've known his real name since the beginning, it doesn't really matter what his name is. It's, you know, sort of like a meta commentary to the entire Joker discussion. Looked great. Jason Fabok's art was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Jeff Johns is also doing the 9-panel grid here. Maybe not the best thing for Fabok, but it led to a really dense and interesting story.
Cool.
And it's a Batman that you're not getting right now in their main books. It's a very classic Batman. And they dispatch with the Jason Todd, Barbara Gordon love story very quickly.
It's surprising. I figured this would be 12 or 14 issues and we would just be living with it for years. I didn't know it was only going to be three. That seems so unusual now.
Yeah. There's no set length for Black Label books.
Yeah, I know. But
it seems like three is kind of their sweet spot for a lot of them. There's a couple that have lasted longer.
Are they oversized issues?
Yeah, they're oversized. This is like 50 pages.
Okay, so they'll put out.
So it is like six issues, basically.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So patreon.com/ifanboys, where you can go to add a book to the rundown. This week, the overwhelming favorite as the patron pick was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin, number one. Story by Eastman and Laird, creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Tom Waltz. And then Tom Waltz and Kevin Eastman did the scripts. Kevin Eastman also did the layouts, or did Laird do the layouts? Was it Eastman?
Yeah, Eastman.
Let me scroll by the 70
Laird
covers.
Laird was just on
to.
Story. I remember very clearly when I was a kid having a huge preference for Laird over Eastman.
Interesting.
Because Laird was more cartoony.
Oh, you're right.
And Eastman was more scratchy. Although, we can get into it when we talk about the art. Are there more setup information that we need to go over?
So one of the conversations that was had during, I guess it was at the patron Discord channel after last week's show, in which we made fun of Ryan and the Power Rangers, was they were discussing what the patron pick was going to be, what they were going to vote for, and this book came up and they thought, well, maybe they'll hate it like Power Rangers and maybe they're the wrong age. And I was like, oh, contraire. We were exactly the right age for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. The cartoon stuff was a little late for us.
No,
the cartoon stuff was the very end of when I would have been watching cartoons, but I did watch them and I had the toys and everything, but it was like, I was like 10 or 11 or something. Like
I mean,
that.
I had a collection, those oversized collections of the original series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had those.
I had two of the four of those, I think.
I have three of the four.
I read, I think, over and over and over and over again. And then the cartoon hit, and that was an everyday thing after school for me.
I think I started reading comics. Mm-hmm. Just after the cartoon showed up, maybe the next year or so. And then I found out that there were these comics that they had been based on. And I found those collections you're talking about. And same thing. Like I fell in. I was like, these are amazing. I remember I was buying it in issues. I want to say I started at 8 or 9.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like, and then the teens, they had all these, the covers went gray. There was one story where it was like gray cover with like an inset image. Mm-hmm. I have one of those somewhere. I have signed by Kevin Eastman because a friend of my mom's was at a wedding, because he's from Maine.
Mm.
And Laird is from New England also. I think he's from Vermont. I might be wrong. Frank Miller's from Vermont. And, you know, like, so he's, you know, it's a little turtle head sketch in there, and he drew it.
The series started in 84. Mm-hmm. You know, I was well too young to be reading indie comics at that point.
They must have taken a big break, because I was definitely buying the issues in teens.
Oh, there's been series since then, but the original series, the one that was the oversized books were collected from, was from the early 80s. And then the cartoon came on in 1990. So that was junior high school. So
I was reading comics in like 88, 89, I think is when I started. And it was during that time.
Oh, sorry. The cartoon came out in 87. I'm looking at the
Yeah, that thing. Makes more sense.
We were 10 years old. So that was totally the right age. I had the toys. I watched the cartoon every day.
Yep.
I read the comic. I mean, this is the most successful indie comic book franchise of all time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By far. They sold the rights to Nick Viacom for like $300 million a few years back. And it's kind of amazing that Kevin Eastman's like, yeah, but let's do more comics.
Why not?
I mean, I have to love that. You know, like, they don't have to do anything, and they're doing fucking IDW comics.
So there you go, Josh. Mirage Studios, the original publisher of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, was out of Dover, New Hampshire.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Go work there. I don't think they exist anymore, do they?
No.
So anyway, let's talk about this book. Just I want to give a context for, we were big, almost everyone of our generation of a certain age, of a certain inclination, is huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fans.
You know what else is interesting about them is that it's not unlike Batman in that, like, it persists and changes. Like, it hasn't gone away.
No.
There's just new versions of it, you know, for each successive generation, which is really cool. I don't know what it is about that.
There's films, there's animated series, there's been one, two, three, four. There's been four animated series. There's been direct-to-video movies. There's been multiple theatrical release films. I mean,
so what's interesting is that originally what it was kind of an indie take on Miller Mazzucchelli's Daredevil. Yeah. It's a ninja story, and I didn't know that then. But now looking at it, I was like, oh yeah, that's completely obvious. That's what this is, and it's not a bad thing.
No,
but like we're talking about, if I started looking at those comics in '88,
yeah,
I mean, you're talking about the golden prime era for an 11-year-old to go, whoa, there's an adult version of this. I mean, it was the coolest thing ever.
Right.
And this comic is very much out of that mold. This issue that we're talking about today, it is that version of it. So it was definitely, I think it's definitely a stylistic sweet spot.
So this is The Last Ronin, and it opens up after I had to scroll through 75 variant covers to get to.
Literally.
Yeah, so we're looking at our press copy, and the actual first page of the story is on page 72 of this PDF. At some point, I was like, I don't know when this is ever going to end. Maybe this is the whole issue. So we're sometime in the future, and I haven't been reading the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics. I know people have been talking about them. I know when Paul was one of our co-hosts, he used to talk about it on the show a lot. I don't know if this fits into the longer story. I don't know. If there's a longer story, I don't know. It's fine. My point is, it starts sometime in the future. We have one of the turtles who's unidentified until the very end, who is old and crackly and is leading a one-man insurrection into Manhattan, which is like a giant fortress now with walls, like Escape from New York. And he has all the weapons. That's part of the reason you don't know who he is. He has the bow staff, he has the sword, he has the nunchucks, he has the sai, and he has a black mask. So we can't identify him from the color of his mask, although that comics, they all wore red masks anyway.
Which was awesome.
And so he's trying to get revenge on somebody, while also being haunted, or not haunted, but, well, I guess haunted, technically speaking, by the ghosts of his brothers, who are clearly dead. You know, we don't know who he's getting revenge on or why. We don't know who he is. We just know he's trying to get somewhere, and eventually we find out who he's trying to get to, and figure out who he is eventually. I actually really like this a lot.
Yeah.
I really like this.
I did and didn't. I have two thoughts on it.
Yeah.
What I do know is that Michelangelo is a party dude. So there's that.
Well, that's the spoiler. That's who the turtle ends up being. I didn't think it was him.
Well, they were really leaning towards it being Raphael. Like, there was, every time they showed him holding something, it was the size. That's what I could see. And he's acting like Raphael did. Raphael was the brooder. He was almost the focus of the comic book. He was really the person. I really liked looking at it. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly like an Elseworld story. Like, you can start. It doesn't matter. Like, oh, they're all dead. This is the future.
Oh, for sure.
It's Dark Knight Returns. It looks great. It looks, you know, beautiful. It's modern, but it definitely has some of the flair of those old comics. And there's, you know, there's little bits where I haven't thought about in a really long time. So I think the villain is Shredder's grandson.
Yeah. Esau and Isaac Escorza are the artists.
Well, the layouts are by right. Eastman, though.
Yeah, but I'm saying the pencils have to over the layouts.
So as a tone thing, as a nostalgic thing, as a thing to look at and watch the action scenes, it was really fun. Basically, the whole thing was just characters talking to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it was the turtle talking to himself about everything. And sometimes he would talk to the ghosts of his dead turtle brothers. you know, that's very surfacey in terms of like plot, and it reminds me of a comic from 1984 trying to be edgy.
Mm-hmm.
You could have taken all the words out of it, and I'd have been just fine with it. And then like they cut to the big bad, and he's talking to himself too. Like, you couldn't get away with this in a Marvel comic book, and I don't know that you could, but it would be tougher. We'd be really rough on it. But just to flip through it, to look at it, to see the action scenes, you know, it definitely brought me back to a time. I don't think it was particularly well written or anything, but you're right, it was a lot of fun to read.
My thought at the end of it was like, if that was a one-shot, I would have loved it. I don't know that I want to read more of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. That's a really good way to look at it.
When I got to the end, I was like, man, if that had just been sort of one shot, Elseworlds, future tale of the turtles, and it ended as it ended, I would have been like, that was terrific.
It will be difficult to not sink after this, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because it's kind of a bummer. Like, you know, the only win to get out of this is that, like, he beats his brothers or, you know, like, they're dead. I don't know. It really did bring back a lot of the things that I remembered from the old comics, though. Like the way that it was a lot different than the cartoons and stuff that most people did. It was a samurai book or ninja book, basically.
As a kid, if you go back, like look at my like kid sketchbooks I had, I think I drew the turtles, you know, from those comics over and over again. Like try to ape that style or, you know, copy it. I love those books.
Yeah.
Those Eastman Laird books.
It's weird, though. They would switch back and forth, and I had a definite preference for Laird over Eastman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just way more, you know, rounded and cartoony, but I was 11, so that sort of makes. But I still like that style now. That's interesting.
I assume we have Casey Jones's granddaughter here. I don't know. There's a lot of things going
on. There's a lot. Yeah. Like, I had to really stretch to remember the bits, you know.
Oh, I didn't know. Like, it was like Shredder's my grandfather. I was like, oh, okay.
Like, I recognize that. I'm trying to find it where he said his name, Heroku something. And I was like, I know that name. Like, I hadn't thought about it in really long
time. I thought about Googling it. And I was like, nah, I'm just going to keep reading to see if they give me.
Yeah, no, that's totally the way to go. And then they talk about, oh, the Baxter, the scientist guy.
Yeah.
You know, and they mentioned that real quick. And I was like, oh, right. Yeah, this. And they're robots, but they're really zombies. And, you know.
I feel like April O'Neil should have looked older.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. The turtle is age fast or slow.
Well, if Shredder's got a grandson and his grandson is like in his 20s or whatever, she looks kind of like Linda Hamilton in Terminator. It's like cool, but like she should have gray hair and be an old lady.
Well, she's got to have red hair.
But she should be old, and that red hair don't last. It goes white.
Well, she dyes it. It's her trademark.
That's true.
You know what's really cool, though, is there's a bit where there's a flashback to them in their sort of turtle lair, and you see the turtles all looking young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that made me happy. I was like, oh, that flashback page is actually by a different artist, and I didn't list that here.
Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really fun.
So let's get to the complicated part, ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin, number one, out of 5. I really enjoyed reading it, so I'm going to go a little bit higher than I think I might. But normally, I think I'm going to go 4.25.
Nice. I'm going to give it a subjective 4.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that if you're 25 and read this, I don't know. But if you're our age and read it, there's going to be something there for you. There's going to be a feeling. It's going to be a tingle.
Here's where I get weird. I'm probably not sticking with it, but if you had handed me this entire miniseries in like a book, I'd probably read the whole book. Is that weird?
No. I will probably read the next one.
I don't know if I want to follow this for like the next 6 months.
Is it 6?
I'm just, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just saying, so. Like,
I think this is good for 3. I want
as,
3. I don't
as like
want
a 6. One, as like a sit down, one time experience, I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I want to spend the next 3 months.
I think that's fair because it will only fade.
I'll tell you what, I'll think about it. It'll depend on the week when it comes out, is how, you know, how big the week is and how, you know, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. I really did enjoy reading it. The cover for the next issue is terrific.
Yeah.
Black and white cover.
What's nice, though, is if you don't like that cover, there's another 65.
Jesus, man. All right. Patreon.com/
That means someone's buying those.
I guess. That's where you can go add a book to the rundown. Any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown of patreon.com/fanboy.
It's really interesting that there is a whole economy in comics that you and I don't know, understand, or pay attention to at all. Like retailer variants and how they get them and who buys them and what it like. We have been doing this for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and we're pretty knowledgeable. I don't know anything about that, and I don't understand it. And further, I don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, we know the base level of, like, order a certain amount of copies, get your variant, that kind of thing, and then they turn around and sell them. I used to, back when I first moved to L.A. and went to a comic store for a few months before I went fully digital, you know, there were guys who would come in every Wednesday and buy they had the variants, like, under their glass case by the register for that week. And there was always, like, the same group of guys that would come in and spend, like, $70 on one of the variants.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, they have value, but only for that window. Like,
yeah, so, no, the value sinks. I don't know if it's a collector thing or what, but the value is artificial.
I ended up with a Valiant Jeff Lemire pencil sketch cover of something, and I sold it for like $150 that week.
Yeah.
And someone bought it immediately. They can't get another person to pay $150 for that, like, issue number 14 of whatever with a pencil sketch Jeff Lemire cover. Like, there's no market for that.
I don't get it. I don't want to get it, like you said.
It's like a stock market for things that retain no value.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. I'm gesturing with my hand like I'm making a serious point.
Quickly talk about how people can help the show.
Sure. You can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. Patrons get to vote on which we do for the patron pick, and that's normally an interesting conversation. There's other things there. Obviously, like, the patrons all together have helped build up the different sort of offerings that we've got right now. I mean, the talk splodes, the book splodes, the media splodes. It's all led to extra shows, extra content, the hangouts, and I think that's the real strength of it. But the real point of it is that you are saying, hey, there's all this stuff going on right now, and there's so much content, and there's all these streaming services, but what I think is important to me is this show that has been, you know, part of my life. And it's, I'm not even just mean ours. It could be any podcast, whatever. But you're sort of putting a little bit of support in there to make it not worth our time. That's not the right way to put it. But, you know, it helps us out a lot. And it says that you appreciate the work that we put into this. And we appreciate that. So you can go there. There's another stretch goal. The next one would be doing a regular G.I. Joe Corner episode of some kind. And then the goal after that would be a return of the quarterly barbecue show. Ugh. Long way from now.
I had barbecue after our hangout. It was the greatest.
Yep.
It wasn't even the greatest barbecue. It's fine barbecue. It's passable.
Oh.
But man, yeah. Just having it after not having it after so long.
Do you remember, you know, there was the old saying, like, even bad pizza is good pizza?
Right, exactly.
I don't believe that's true.
No, I've had really bad pizza.
Yeah, no, but bad barbecue? I guess it's
hard to mess up.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you overcooked it.
Yeah. But if you're smoking it right, you can overcook it.
So no, it's I don't want to denigrate it. It was fine barbecue. I'm just saying, like, it wasn't even, like, the best barbecue, but
hadn't had it in a long time, it's pretty good.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think I sat down. I just stood over the counter in the kitchen and just ate it out of the thing. Because I didn't want to stop. I took one bite, and I didn't want to stop taking bites. So I didn't move from the counter.
I hear you.
Yeah.
So that's patreon.com/ifanboy. You can go to the t-shirt and sundries store over at ifanboy.threadless.com. We have our 8 designs there, including the Stay Home and Read Comics stuff. And remember, a portion of those sales goes to the Comic Book United Fund to help our retailers. You want to skip all that rigmarole, get to our ifanboy.com/support, and you can do a direct donation via PayPal if that's what you so choose to do. And finally, go over to ifanboy.com/ifanboy, where you will find a link to Amazon.
ifanboy.com/Amazon.
Amazon.com/iFanboy is not a thing.
No, you said ifanboy.com/iFanboy, which I guess is a thing, but I don't know where that takes
you. I don't know.
You.
I'm guessing that would be weird if that was an error. I'm sorry. ifanboy.com/Amazon. Will you find links to Amazon to buy your home all the time?
Holiday stuff.
Don't tell me that you haven't been like, you know what I could use right now? And you'll find links to all the books we've talked about on Booksplodes to keep yourself occupied if you're not going anywhere. So there.
Yeah.
That's it. The next thing would be patrons. If you above the $5 or higher mark, you get a patron power. And this week, Matt Palmer has the ability to make any food out of solely vegetable matters, but it will be every bit as good and indistinguishable from that barbecue and steak that you so crave.
So somehow he can take, is it just for pure vegetables or like the stuff you make like vegetable stock with, like the extras, just any kind of vegetable stuff?
Yeah, anything that is non-animal product can be made into
barbecue.
Like, you're like, these are the best ribs I've ever had. Or like a Thanksgiving turkey. You're like, what is this? This is all legumes. You're kidding me, Matt. Nope.
Is it actually healthy?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
he's not transmogrifying vegetables into meat. It just tastes like barbecue, but it's actually vegetarian.
It's just amazing alchemical. He's an incredibly talented food preparer.
It's interesting.
It is healthier.
So it's like a veggie burger, but it actually tastes like a burger.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. and the texture isn't repulsive.
Don't be coming at me with that Impossible Burger stuff. I had one of those and it was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an aftertaste. There's some, it can be 99% of the way, but that 1% is like, something's wrong here.
Yeah.
I've had a Beyond Burger. It was pretty good.
Chukalana's power. This is actually a food power also. This was not planned. You know how like the Taskmaster can watch Captain America fight, and then he can fight exactly like Captain America, or he can shoot like Hawkeye as long as Connor, he sees Hawkeye.
Of course I do.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm making sure.
You weren't talking to me. I know.
Chukalana can watch any cooking show and immediately cook the dish and the style of the cook. It's a cooking-based Taskmaster power.
That has to be in Chew somewhere. Like, John Layman must have done that.
Maybe. I don't remember. Yeah. It's only cooking TV shows. It's not like Chukalana can watch Josh make ribs and cook Josh's ribs. It's only
for to be televised.
It has to be televised.
So it has to be broadcast or streamed.
Yeah, I suppose Chukalana can watch you cook on one of our barbecue shows, because that's technically...
Yeah, that counts.
But not like in the kitchen. Chukalana's cooking power only comes from screen-based cooking.
So is it then accepted knowledge and then that can be cooked, or is it like a fugue state? Like you have to watch it immediately? And
No. It's like Taskmaster. Once you're here, they learns it. They, you know, can cook.
It's retained.
Yeah, it's retained.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
So you want to go to Chukalana's house for dinner?
Yeah, definitely. You know what? Have Matt get over there and, exactly. And then you've got the best of all worlds.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go add a book to the rundown and also to become a patron and get your patron power live on the show.
Let's do a quick email. James of Calgary, Alberta, Canada says, I have been a so-called Marvel zombie, quotation marks, for a while now. I feel like I'm missing something and often ask for DC recommendations. I have read many of them. New Frontier, Red Sun, All-Star Superman, Dark Knight Returns, Flashpoint. All great. Flashpoint. But as far as I can tell, these are all Elseworld stories. Why are so many beloved, revered DC stories outside of continuity? Do you have recommendations for the best in-continuity DC stories? And I thought this was interesting because I have not answered this version of this question because he's right. Many of the best recommendations I have are out of continuity.
Well, this is the grand continuity debate, which we used to have quite often, which we hardly do anymore. In fact, we just put a show out on YouTube. One of our old YouTube shows was literally the continuity debate episode. Because continuity is a lot of fun.
At the time.
Yeah, and when it's done well, when it's handled well, when the right pieces are put into place, it can be incredibly rewarding in a way that nothing else can be. It can also be a giant drain and an anchor on the storytelling. And so with a book like All-Star Superman or like Red Sun and New Frontier or Dark Knight Returns, the creators can really just focus in on the characters, their essence, not worry about baggage, not worry about is this the proper version or histories. They can just tell an essential story, a story that gets to the essence of the characters without worrying about, you know, where they are right now. You know, they can just break it down to the essential building blocks of the character and focus on that. What makes the character great in the first place. Mm. And that's something that you can do not worrying about continuity. It's harder to do in regular books. So you got to juggle a lot of masters and a lot of things. And New Frontier can be set in the 60s. It can be, the characters can all be like the version of the characters that Darwin Cook sees as the best. He has total control. Same thing with All-Star Superman and Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely can really just hone
everything
in on.
Tom Taylor's doing right now.
Yeah.
Do you believe that DC's best tend to be out of continuity stories, whereas many of Marvel's famous storylines tend to be in continuity?
Yeah, because they just don't do as many out of continuity stories.
Yeah, that's true.
And we do like them when they do. And even things like the Old Man series has been great.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's essentially out of continuity because future stories are never really fully in continuity. So those have been great too. It's just that they don't really do them as much.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that said, what would you throw at him?
Probably a lot of it's going to be older, but like I have on my iPad right now all of the JSA run from Jeff Johns and James Robinson and David Goyer and that whole JSA, the Justice Society of America transition where the book changed titles and but stayed basically the same team. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite all-time DC runs. You know, we really loved the beginning of that Green Lantern run when the Sinestro Corps War and all that stuff really kicked off. That was incredible.
I mean, I'd say Grant Morrison and Howard Porter's JLA.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. I could go, Hitman was technically in continuity.
Yep.
Gotham Central is in continuity. How about this one? Cataclysm and Aftershock.
Yeah.
Those were Batman stories Gotham was hit by. Those were so good all the way through. Like for years, they were amazing. Gotham City's hit by a giant earthquake. And then there's the aftershock, and then becomes no man's land because Gotham is cut off from the world, and it becomes its own sort of little serfdom.
Yeah.
That was great.
It's incredible. That's, you had a lot of characters come out of that. Greg Rucka was the main writer. Like, it was a terrific run. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you had Brubaker doing Batman, and that was a great run of books too. You can always find great runs. Jeff Johns' run on Flash, and Mark Waid's run on Flash, and Jeff Johns' run on Action Comics. I mean, there's tons of great in-continuity DC books, but for the most part, when you're going to hand someone a trade paperback or something from DC and say, "This, you should need to read this," it's most likely going to be an Elseworlds story. That's right.
Yeah, I think I just gave him like this 100 issues is good. It probably isn't too.
No, helpful. But there's absolutely great. I mean, you can go back into listen to 20 years of us shows of us talking about great DC books. Yeah. As far as like collected stories, plus Elseworlds stories tend to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, so you get a satisfying like story arc.
Yep.
There's no lack of good DC books. I'm just trying to think. I mean, the problem is a lot of them are
Is Man of Steel?
Yeah, I mean, John Byrne's Superman stuff is terrific. Man of Steel miniseries, yeah. And then the first, I think, the 22 or 23 issues of the Superman reboot book after Crisis on Infinite Earths was John Byrne, and that was...
Peter David's Aquaman.
Peter David's Aquaman was great. A lot of these are late 80s to 90s, early 2000s, and then, you know, it gets challenging with the New 52 because there's certainly good books came out of that. You know, obviously, Snyder and Capullo's Batman was a great run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great set of books, and that... use continuity, and I would hand that to any Batman fan without a problem.
The Batgirl series from the early 2000s.
Yeah, that was Stephanie Brown Batgirl. Oh, those two.
Yep.
The Cassie Kane Batgirl series.
Mm-hmm.
It was Kelly Puckett.
Jones? Kelly Puckett. Kirby Puckett?
Kirby Puckett played for Minnesota Twins. Kelly Puckett was the writer?
Yes.
That was a great series, and then also the Stephanie Brown Batgirl series in the early 2000s or mid-2000s, whenever that happened, was a great series as well.
So that's a lot.
There's a lot. There's a ton out there. Yeah. And I said, we've been talking about these books for 20 years. There's been no lack of discussion about great DC books.
So, fun conversation that. You can write to us at contact@ifanboy, and don't ever hesitate to send in a question. Talksplode is out with Gene Luen Yang. I spoke with him for about an hour and 20. Real big fan of that. Booksplode, Connor and I talking about Brubaker and Phillips Pulp. That's out. Animated Brain Trust, Batman Death in the Family. That's out. Are you catching a pattern here?
Yeah.
And then this last week, there's a new media explode where we talk about Ted Lasso.
Also a West Wing special. And we did like four emails that were fun.
Yeah. A lot of show in there.
Yeah. Almost exactly an hour. Those shows, we don't time them. We just do them, and they've almost all of them been almost exactly an hour, which is bizarre.
Yep. So you can check all that stuff out. Those, other than the animated ones, those are all because of the patrons.
Mm-hmm.
And even more than that, you all get to listen to them, even if you're not a patron. So you should thank your patrons for those things. And we should curse them for giving us more work, except they're very fun to do.
Yeah, they are. And this was a crazy week in terms of shows. So you got eight shows this month. And they were fun.
We were going to talk about other things, but there's only TV now. Sorry.
Yeah. So check us out at ifanboy.com. That's where all of our shows are, all of our old content. You can find a lot of writing on old DC books or over at ifanboy.com, a lot of old articles. You can also find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following at ifanboy on Twitter and at ifanboycomics on Instagram, which also is where you can find the best of the week in panels feature when there are best panels to feature. Individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. We did not coordinate our usernames. We have a YouTube page, youtube.com/ifanboy. This is also something that patrons unlocked. We've been uploading our old video content from 12 years ago to youtube.com/ifanboy. Three episodes a week come out. This past week, we had a mini in which Chris Eliopoulos from on the floor of New York Comic Con told us how he met John Romita. And then we had a spotlight show on Alan Davis, and we also did a vault show. We each reviewed a single trade paperback. That was where you got a lot of indie books talked about, but also classic Marvel and DC stuff is there as well. I don't know exactly what we talked about on this one, but you can find all those at youtube.com/ifanboy, where you can like and subscribe to our channel there and make sure you don't miss any of those old video shows.
Boy, we are deluging people, aren't we?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of content. Patrons unlocked a lot of stuff.
Is that a verb, deluging?
Deluging.
I don't believe it is.
Yeah.
I don't think that works. We are unleashing a deluge. If you like this show, if you like the things that we do, you can leave a review or a star rating over on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that lets you review those kind of things. We appreciate everybody does that too. I just want to thank all the people for being rad. I think it's really great. It's been a constant, by the way, as long as we've been doing this. Great people. Or better yet, tell your friends all about us. Post on social media. Share the links. Take forth what we have said and either agree or disagree publicly or privately amongst your family over dinner. Whatever it is you want to do, it's up to you. And that is the end of this show. I am Josh.
I'm Connor.
You stay safe out there. It seems to be getting scarier. Who knows what's going to happen over the next week? If you haven't, good Lord, go vote. Please do that. Wash your hands. Stay away from people as much as possible. Be safe and help people out. Be the best person you can right now because everybody needs that. Be more Ted Lasso. That's what you need to do.
Exactly. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye. Pressure! I'm sure you have some cosmic rationale.